What's up, everyone? Welcome back to your favorite podcast in Toronto, Sports from the Six, here with you for episode number 17. And as always, I'm joined by the Splash Brothers, Dwayne, when's Eagles season Turner, and Ali Khan, where's my MVP, Ravjani.
What can I say? I'm just cooking it up.
A bit of a somber mood here for me in the booth today as my LeBron-led Cavaliers bowed out of the NBA final last night. I'm a little bit upset, but before we get into the tear duct city, we'd like to maybe touch on also a bit of a somber series for Tampa Bay, bowing out in six games to the Chicago Blackhawks.
Well, there was a little bit of lightning. Unfortunately, it wasn't the good kind for Tampa Bay fans. The Chicago Blackhawks, for the third time in six seasons, are the NHL's Stanley Cup champions. Guys, last time we came into the studio, it was 2-1 Tampa. The tides looked to be turning. We were talking about a beat-down Chicago defense that played a lot of minutes throughout the finals, but we all brought up the fact that the Chicago team has been resilient. They come out and they seem to save their best for last. That's exactly what they did in taking these last three games.
Yeah, valiant effort from the Tampa Bay Lightning. Obviously, they were playing hurt. Tyler Johnson was injured throughout the series, and obviously Ben Bishop missing one of those games. So, you know, valiant effort for them. They have a bright future ahead of them. And like you said, Ali, I mean, the Chicago Blackhawks, when they need it, they get it from their star players. And obviously Duncan Keith had that game-winning goal in the game-deciding game. But, yeah. You know, obviously, these are two teams that, who knows? I mean, they could be seeing each other in finals for years to come.
I think it was really a neat and tidy end of the series to Chicago. They really kind of shown just what they can do with that deep team. Never really looked like they were rattled at all, even being down a game. Just took their time and played their good team Chicago Blackhawks game for them and came out with the cup again. And realistically, I don't think any of us really doubted it. I know I didn't. Tampa Bay has an amazing young team, and Dwayne brings up a good point with them potentially meeting in the finals for the few years down the line. I think Steve Yzerman and that whole Tampa Bay front office deserves a lot of credit. Dwayne brought up an excellent point again about Ben Bishop being injured. For a tall goalie like that to pull a groin, to tear a groin in the Stanley Cup playoffs is so huge. And that goalie had really stood on his head for them. We talked about the goalies that he beat getting to the Stanley Cup playoffs, like Carey Price, and the fact that he tore his groin and still made 31 saves out of 33 saves in the Cup final in the final game. Huge credit to that young Tampa team, but that's a dynasty in Chicago, boys. And, you know, we've talked about the depth of the lineup. They could be back there again.
Yeah, and you talk about the Chicago team, and for me, it all starts with leadership. We've talked about Jonathan Toews. There are a lot of guys that tweeted out, if they could start a franchise with any single player right now, the mix of leadership, quality leadership, experience now winning, and of course, being able to put the puck in the net, there's no one better really than Jonathan Toews, who's defied that throughout his career, and he's done it the World Junior stage. We all remember that incredible shootout that he had with Patrick Kane, nonetheless, of all people at the World Juniors.
Right.
Of course, his performance in the Olympics, and now Stanley Cups. I mean, what else can you say besides magnificent to describe his still young career for Jonathan Toews?
27 years old.
He continues to blow me away, and I was watching it with a friend of mine the other day. We were watching the game, and, you know, I'm the same age as Jonathan Toews. I'm an 88 baby. I'm 27 years old, and I'm looking at this guy like he's the captain of all captains. He's the guy that it doesn't matter if you're a vet or a youngster, they all look to him. Arguably, you know, people say Sidney Crosby's the best player in the league. I tend to disagree right now. I got to agree with you, AK, and lean towards Jonathan Toews because this guy is a winner. He's a clutch performer. He's a leader. Like, the list goes on and on. And, you know, he's got a World Junior gold. He's got two Olympic gold medals, three Stanley Cups, Conn Smythe, World Hockey Championship gold. Like, he's 27. He's won it all.
So, Flip, let me ask you a question. Say some international tournament is going to be taking place in a month's time.
Yep.
And Team Canada has to pick a captain. Is it, without a doubt, Jonathan Toews?
That's a great question. And I would actually refer back to Sochi 2014 when they were awarding the captaincy to the Olympic team for Canada. They gave it to Sid, but before Sid accepted it, he went to the whole team and asked if they agreed with him getting it over Toews, and everyone agreed, including Toews. So that just goes to show you how close these Canadian players and NHL players alike right. really respect Toews. And to answer your question, I got to go with Johnny T right now. He's earned it. A lot of people will say that Kroos has performed on the international level 2010.
Kroos, eh?
The golden goal, Sid Kroos, Sid the Kid, whatever you prefer.
Tasers, Caners, Keithers.
Yeah, yeah, we're rolling right now. But, you know, that he scored the golden goal. But in that game, Taves had a goal and two assists. In 2014, in the gold medal game, he had a goal and an assist. Right. He's just a clutch performer all around, and kudos to him. Kudos to that Chicago Blackhawks team. They deserved it.
And, yeah, Flip, I agree with you. And you've really seen a maturity as well. We know about Patrick Kane, the sort of the trouble that he had, the cab incident.
Look out for cabbies in the next couple weeks. Hey, Kane might be on a bender.
You know what? To say he's really meshed in nicely in that room. And when you have guys like Keith, you have guys like Taves, even the experience, the billion games of Marian Hossa. That we've seen. So, I mean, you have guys like that. And then it's just a place, and we talked about it. Young players want to go there. The Brendan Saads thrive in that kind of environment. The Nicholas Halmerson thrives in that type of environment. Why? Because they're learning from guys that know what it takes to win. They play at the highest level.
Right.
And they bring it all season. They're not this team that sneaks into the playoffs and does well from there. I mean, the LA Kings have been great, but we've kind of learned there's no on and off button. The Chicago Blackhawks will bring you their best almost every night for not only 82 games, but then bring that through a playoff drive. And that's something that makes them a special kind of dynasty in today's era.
Definitely a dynasty, and definitely like the model NHL organization. If you're trying to mimic the winning model, you got to look at Chicago, because, yes, we've talked about the Hossas and the Tays and the Canes and the Sharps. But you got to look at the supporting cast as well, the Saads and the Shaws and the Bickles and all these players like Tara Vinen, who's come out of nowhere. These are all Chicago draft choices who they've groomed and brought up through the farm system. And I really think that whole Chicago organization, kind of like Yzerman, deserves some credit. They really deserve a lot of credit in terms of all those players that are on Chicago right now are all Chicago draft picks for the most part.
It's unbelievable what they're able to do. I mean, the NHL tries to create some sort of parity, especially when it comes to, like, you know, the cap situation. So that's part of the reason why there was a dip in performance in terms of the Chicago Blackhawks after they won that first cup. I mean, they ended up losing, I believe it was Ladd, Bufflin, a few of their top guys.
That first time
starting goalie Antti Niemi as well.
Exactly. But, I mean, you know, they just reloaded, and not too long, you know, obviously now we're here two cups later. It's just they just find ways to, like you said, Flip, mold these young players that they draft and just create that culture of winning. So it's
all due to Corey Crawford. You bring up a great point in Antti Niemi leaving. Yeah. Corey Crawford stepped right in and filled those shoes.
Two cup rings now, Corey Crawford.
Fantastic, and he doesn't even get the credit that he deserves, really, because he's on such a good Chicago team.
Yeah. No, I mean, look at the amount of wins he's had. In I think he has – I can't remember, but I remember seeing a stat come up where he – is up there in the standings in terms of like 10 plus playoff, or 10 plus wins in certain playoff runs. I can't remember the exact stat, but I believe he leads it now just because of the long runs that the Chicago Blackhawks have gone through. So
yeah, a couple of impressive runs for sure.
Good for him.
Guys, on the Tampa Bay side, Steven Stamkos held in check all series, didn't score a goal. Tyler Johnson, their number one faceoff guy, breaking his wrist early in the series.
Yeah.
Nikita Kucherov injuring himself in game 5. A lot of things sort of went wrong for the Tampa Bay Lightning in this series. They're a very good team, and they definitely did overcome the expectations. They pushed themselves to the limit, and you got to give all the credit to John Cooper. But really, I don't really know what they could have done differently, if anything, in order to have beat the Blackhawks this series. It just seemed like they were outmatched after Game 3.
I agree, especially with the injuries. I agree wholeheartedly.
Outmatched, definitely. Injuries played a huge role. But at the bottom line, I think at the end of the day, Chicago is just too good of a team, too deep right now, and maybe Tampa gets there in a couple seasons, but I don't know. I don't know how you can go against a core of guys that have been together now for 3 Stanley Cup runs, or I guess this is technically the 4th for some of them. I can't bet against a squad like that, and unfortunately, my bets haven't been working out the best these days, as we'll soon learn more of, but at least the Hawks pulled one out, and definitely a dynasty, and definitely still a team to watch moving forward.
Just for the record, Dwayne had Tampa winning this series, I want to say.
In seven games.
Right, so Dwayne was the messiah for a little while there.
My streak is over, guys.
But that's
all right. He got the love he deserved.
Flip, you and myself had the Blackhawks in 6, so congratulations on that.
I appreciate it.
We will be claiming our ticket For the other series that just concluded, guys, man, this one we debated. We've talked about it off the air.
Hold on. Like, let me tighten my belt.
We're just going to take this on the air because there is a lot of talking to do about the NBA Finals, which concluded yesterday. That's the right. Golden State Warriors, for the first time in 40 years, are bringing the championship back home to the Bay Area.
Where do you guys want to start with this? Should we start with the predictions? Should we start with the MVP? Like, where do you want to start with this? Because this is clearly going to eat up some time.
Let's start with the predictions. What did we all have?
Let's start with the predictions. I said, you know, I'll sit here and I'll admit to my bias. I was LeBron bias. I thought it was Cleveland's year. I sat here and talked about LeBron until, like, I almost was ready to marry the guy. I was so in love with him. I think I took Cavs in 7, maybe 6, but I definitely thought the Cavs are going to win. Look, all the credit is due to the Golden State Warriors. They were the best team in the league this year. They were the better team in the playoffs, and they deserve to win.
Flip, where's your headband?
No
qualms. I don't see your LeBron headband on today.
Buddy, well, I still got it. It's just, you know, right? It's kind of shifting places like his does.
Your Dellavedova beard is gone. Your headband is gone.
I still got the Dellavedova beard. It's patchy as hell, but, you know,
Kevin,
we're out here.
Your Kevin Love suit is still on. But
Thank you. But you know what? All jokes aside, you know, I was heavy on Cleveland. After game 3, you know, I was sitting pretty. I was, you know, chirping you guys aggressively. But, hey, it's a long series. It's a long season. Cleveland was down to 7 men in the rotation. You can't. I don't care who you have on the court. If you have a team like Golden State who are rotating in 9 and 10 guys a game sometimes, especially with the bench they have, you're not going to win.
Well, that's precisely why I think Ali and I picked the Golden State Warriors.
Dwayne the Body guaranteed a Game 4 victory, and he got it.
Hey, he got it. But those predictions you guys made were, you know, they're easier to say when you don't have a team to stack up against them. Yeah, don't get me wrong. Golden State stack up better at all the positions, and I agreed with you guys on that. But when you have arguably their second and third best players out, man.
Well, I mean, it's hard when Matthew Dellavedova for 3
it's
games
a different,
is locking down an
it's
MVP
a different,
candidate.
It's a different series with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love in it. I kind of compared it to what I said to you before. Imagine removing the second and third best players on the Golden State Warriors this series, it would have been a different series.
Well, in that case, I mean, that means taking away Klay Thompson, who didn't show up, and then Draymond Green, who showed up in
the last
game.
No, I don't necessarily mean the best on paper. I mean the best that they had this series, you know what I'm saying?
At the time, okay.
Yeah, because, like, yeah, Klay is definitely, yeah, we're talking second best player. I would agree with you. I'd say Klay. He did have a mediocre series, especially last night. Which
did you
is,
see him when he
is
fouled
frustrating.
Out?
I just loved his face. I mean,
did you
he
see
just
him?
Came to the bench.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, you know what? The whole thing, and I said it to you guys before, it was just so deflating for me because I was just like, I just wanted to see more ball, and I wanted to see some more compete level down the stretch, and Cleveland just was so battered. They didn't have it.
Just can't win with the team of J.R. Smith, Matthew Dellavedova, Iman Shumpert. I have the statistic right here, and we're just talking about
it's
how remarkable it is. It is an ugly one. 23 for 92 in the last 3 games for Matthew Dellavedova, J.R. Smith, and Iman Shumpert combined. They have nice hair, don't get me wrong, but that enough is just not going to propel you to an NBA championship, no matter who you're playing with.
Right, that's right. I mean, Matthew Dellavedova, I mean, he was, you could argue he was the unsung hero for games 2 and 3, and he was providing some excellent defense, like you mentioned, against Steph Curry, ball denial and things like that. But after that, I mean, he was non-existent. I mean, there were times where he was left with the ball during late shot clock opportunities, and he didn't know what to do with the ball. He was lobbing the ball up to whoever was there. He was afraid to take shots. And you mentioned J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert. Those guys, I mean, they were chucking up threes, but despite whatever LeBron did to drive in and kick it out to them, you know, it wasn't paying off. So, I don't know. I mean, Flip, you bring up the fact that Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, maybe they make a difference. But in terms of Kevin Love, I mean, that means Tristan Thompson isn't on the floor. And I feel like he was a huge part of their success, especially early in the series. So I don't know. I mean, Kyrie Irving definitely makes a difference. I definitely think so. Just having that secondary scorer, somebody who can create their own shot. But Kevin Love, who knows? I mean, his future is up in the air right now. So
yeah, it's hard to say. And you know what? We talked about it again before the show. Tristan Thompson definitely deserves a ton of credit. He played a very, very solid series, and I don't even think it's even close without him.
First Canadian to average a double-double.
And
in
yeah,
the NBA
you know, you can say all things about LeBron's stat line, but realistically, Thompson kept these guys in games with that offensive boarding, and he really put on a clinic in terms of offensive boarding. I think you could have put a YouTube clip on how to offensive rebound in the NBA with his montage from this series, because it looked like he had like octopus arms out there, just tipping balls from out of nowhere, grabbing boards. And you know what? As much as it was a somber series for the Cavs, that's one of the bright spots they got to look forward, because he really came out of his shell and really, I think, made a name for himself in this playoffs, especially the finals.
Well, absolutely. He's a guy that, and sorry to cut
you
off.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, buddy.
He turned down $13 million last offseason. He
took a bet on himself.
He basically bet on himself, and he's like, I'm going to have a good season. I'm going to put myself in a situation where, I mean, you're looking at minimum for Tristan Thompson.
He's getting
now,
paid
$15 to $18 million, which is approaching the max range.
Yeah, wow. He's going to get paid for sure.
No, no, no. You just pretty much just said what I was going to say. I mean, yeah, he took a bet on himself and it paid off. I mean, obviously nobody would have foreseen him starting in the NBA Finals or in any critical playoff games, but I mean, he proved himself when they needed him. So the Cavs are going to have to make a decision, and I think that decision is going to be paying Tristan Thompson.
Well, funny you mention of someone starting unexpectedly. Andre Iguodala getting inserted into that starting lineup was clearly a massive change in the series. Apparently it was enough to win him the MVP award. I think that's a little bit crazy, especially when you compare stat lines. I know AK Advanced Stats Ravjani over there is ready to go here for this MVP debate, but I just look at it like this. LeBron played with nobody,
right,
against the best team in the NBA up and down. Let's just look at this stat line for one sec. 45.8 minutes per game averaged.
Right.
35.8 points, 13.3 rebounds, right, and 8.9 assists per game.
Near triple-double.
And you know what? I'm LeBron bias, and I'm trying to see past that for the sake of this argument and for the sake of the people that will hopefully listen to this, although if you're checking the ticker counter on the website, only 23 people do, so don't believe the madness. We're the hottest podcast in the city. That number's at least
podcast in the six.
At least at 1,000. But anyway, I just think MVP award, regardless of what team wins, now I know Dwayne has a different opinion on that, should go to the player that meant the most to his team. And when I look at stat lines like that and records that the man set and scoring 5,000 points in the playoffs, and it goes on and on. I don't know. I kind of think he got robbed a bit. I know you guys disagree. Maybe I'm trying to salvage onto something here for the Cavs. But I just think he deserves a lot more credit than he's getting. And I think because he's LeBron and because he takes a lot of flack, and don't get me wrong, LeBron the guy, you know, he's cocky as hell, and I don't really know if I necessarily like that. But LeBron the player, come on. You don't think, oh man, I don't know. I know you guys think Iguodala deserved it, but I really do think he should have been more in the conversation at least.
For me, it goes down to this. When the series was 2-1, the Warriors clearly were struggling for something. They were on the brink of really falling apart. If they lost game 4, yes, they're deep enough to come back, but teams historically in the NBA Finals have not ever come back from 3-1. Iguodala made this kind of a difference. When he was on the floor, LeBron James shot 38% from the field. Now, that's a very, very un-LeBron James-like number.
So 40%, yeah, usually, though, so still
right,
pretty
right,
good.
38%,
he's usually around
50%. Right, but remember, Kawhi Leonard got Finals MVP last year, and LeBron still averaged, what, almost 30 points? So
Kawhi Leonard also undeserving of the MVP, but
but
another,
that's a story
at that
for
time,
a different
you thought
day.
So?
I don't agree with that, but we're going to go with this. Right. LeBron shot 38% from the field. The Cavs were a minus 55 with Iguodala on the court, and he's a guy that's played with the bench, he's played with the first unit, so he can really mix and match where you go. When he sat down, LeBron James abused Klay Thompson,
Harrison Barnes,
Draymond Green, yep, Steph Curry, and Sean Livingston to a tune of 44%. And the Cavs were plus 30 without Iguodala on the floor. Mm-hmm. To me personally, when I see the one-man impact winning 3 games in a row, being inserted into that starting lineup and working in all matchup situations, to me that spells MVP.
I just want to play off of what you said, because you mentioned the fact that he came in game 4 and started from then on. His impact was there from the very beginning. Like when he would be coming off the bench, and like you said,
Game 3 comeback, he was all over that.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, his impact goes beyond those last 3 games. Andre Iguodala, like you mentioned, I mean, he was the most effective defender on LeBron James. Van Gundy brought it up. It's just like anytime LeBron James got the ball and it wasn't Andre Iguodala on him, he would have to he should be going in the post because, I mean, there was no other person who could contain him unless they were going to throw a double team at him. And Andre Iguodala, he found ways to make sure that once he did get that ball in the post, he would have to pass out and have to rely on somebody else to either huck up a shot or do something with the ball. And, you know, obviously we mentioned the other role players. They weren't able to do that. So, yeah, Flip, you bring up the fact that that you personally think that the finals MVP doesn't have to be reliant on the winner. But I personally think that it has to be.
Right.
I don't know. I just I feel like LeBron James, look, I'm just reading a stat right here where he accounted for 38.3% of the offense, which is second only to Michael Jordan. 93, exactly, when they won. Look, he had an unbelievable impact. They're not, this game is a sweep, and it's not even close if he doesn't put up the numbers he does. But again, I just think that the winner has to get it because I feel like this is not a regular season award where you can
fair.
Just give it to, you know, the best player over the course of a season.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're giving out the NBA Finals MVP, it has to go to the player who not only was the best player on the floor,
but their
the
team won.
That led the team to a win.
And even as I use analytics as a tool, Dwayne, just to sort of finish that thought on Andre Iguodala getting the MVP from my side, it didn't feel like the Cavs were in control of this series at all after Game 4. Last night, even after halftime, they came back. They took a two-point lead. There was no panic from the Warriors bench. They seemed to have it all figured out. And I think Andre Iguodala, although he's not a guy that's had a deep run in the playoffs with the Sixers, he's still a veteran presence. He guards your best guy every night. He was that in Philadelphia when he was the cornerstone of that Sixers team.
That's right.
He brought a sense of calm, cool collectiveness to the team that came as early as Game 3, in my eyes, during that 20-point comeback where they almost came back and stole that win. And from that point forward, they really took off. And that, to me, again, is what sniffs MVP. Not to take anything away from LeBron. Heck, I'm looking at the numbers right now. Without LeBron on the floor, J.R. Smith 0-9, Dellavedova 0-7, James Jones 0-3, Shumpert 0-2. That totals to 0-21. So there's no telling. And you got to appreciate greatness on both sides, in my mind.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where the job that Andre Iguodala did on the world's best player as part of the world's best team, which the Warriors are, gives them his due as MVP.
My thing is at the end of the day, you know, the stats you throw out are relevant, but from what I understand, from what you just said, LeBron's shooting percentage went down 4% with Iguodala on him. My opinion, yeah, that's pretty
6%.
Good. 6%. What was it then? What was this? I thought you said 45 and 39?
38 and 44. Cavs were minus 55 with Iguodala on, and the Cavs were plus 30 with Iguodala
on. So if we're making the argument that, you know, he guards LeBron and that's why he deserves it, I guess, you know, I can see it. But
he scored, though, as well. He scored in the series. He shot the three at a good
He was definitely clutch for them, and I'm not trying to take away from his performance because he definitely elevated their game, and he definitely breathed life into the starting lineup when they put him in there. I just, and you know, maybe it's because I'm so biased for LeBron. I just, you know, the records that he set, 5,000 points in the playoffs. I know that's the whole playoffs, and maybe that's where I'm getting starry-eyed because it's like it's the whole playoffs as a piece, and I'm not looking at the six games. I just think at the end of the day, if you take away Iguodala's performance, there's still a very good chance Golden State wins. I know they were not looking good at the start, and he came in and they started playing better. You take him away, still a very good chance that they win. You take LeBron away, they're going to lose for sure. And that's what the MVP is about, the most valuable to the squad. Without him, what do they do? Without Iguodala, they still have a great team and a great chance to win. Without Kyrie, without Love, regardless of, you know, the Tristan Thompson thing, which is a great point, Dwayne, you take LeBron away, the team's nothing. You just said it. They don't even score with the guys on the floor when he's not on the floor. He was the best player in the series, whether he deserved it or not, because I get Iguodala was mad influential in terms of turning it around. I don't know. I just, when it comes down to the most valuable player, it was LeBron.
For me, there's a couple of things in play here. One, I don't think we saw, although they won in six, and they won pretty comfortably the last three games.
Definitely.
I didn't see the best basketball that I've seen from Steph and Klay.
No.
They at times look completely like the first three games, Steph looked completely discombobulated in the series. And the last three games, Klay didn't look like Klay.
No.
So I think for the Warriors to win how they won, a lot of that was Iguodala and was the presence and that he brought. For me as well, though, the thing that comes into play is the other side of things. We really got to see David Blatt and his, I guess, lack of experience on the NBA final stage. Not to say he won't be a great coach, and he hasn't been a great coach in Europe before, but we were talking about this off air. His ability to just, I understand you have to, you can't play Mozgov in all situations, but there were times in the game, like securing a rebound late in a game.
Yeah, you scratch your head.
James Jones yeah. was in there rebounding, and you gotta, and we saw it with Dwayne Casey earlier this year with the Raptors. You have to sometimes use your best lineup rather than adjusting to their best lineup, and I think that's where they really, really missed out on Mozgov, because you look at their current roster as constructed. Mozgov, to me, is the second most talented player in that active lineup after LeBron. And to just derail his presence and not give him the minutes that he deserved, I think put an acceleration as well on Golden State coming away with this title.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Mozgov definitely was putting up points and rebounding the ball when he had the chance. I mean, the thing is, with Steve Kerr, who we'll get to in a bit, but with Steve Kerr, he was content leaving Draymond Green a lot of the time playing that five position.
So, who, by the way, also didn't have his best series as well.
No. Exactly. I mean, it was only, like I said, it was only those last three games that Draymond kind of showed. Obviously, he finished with a triple-double for that last game. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He was content leaving him in there at the five. And, look, for all the accolades Draymond Green has earned over the course of the year, the size difference between him and Mozgov is just something that David Blatt had to exploit. And for whatever reason, he decided that he was going to leave, Timofey Mozgov on the bench and let Tristan Thompson, who had a great series again, but it's just something that, I mean, in terms of somebody who can score the ball, they didn't take advantage of that, and leaving him off, taking him off the floor at that time, it just didn't make sense from David Blatt.
And it's not like Steve Kerr wasn't scrambling. He scrambled his lineups a ton. David Lee came in desperation. Festus Ezeli played a larger role than we thought in this series. You can't tell me there was no room for Mozgov there,
for sure.
And I think that was a bit of a misstep on the part of the Cavs. I think if they do, again, I think they're going to be the favorites to win the title next year, considering who might leave from the Warriors. So I think the Cavs will be the favorites next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I know that's another thing. They have the greatest player in the world.
Bets on the six, sure. Back at it again.
But they're going to need Mozgov, and that's why you need him to learn and grow in situations like this, and you need him on the court.
I think that's important to look at, because clearly when Mozgov was in there, he showed that he's ready to play. He's ready to take that starting center role on a clutch team. My whole thing, and before we beat this whole topic to death, when I look at the overall series, six games, two themes pop out for me. One, obviously the injuries on Cleveland and what could have been. But on the same breath, what could have been for Golden State if they actually clicked how they did during the year? Because I'm with Dwayne. Some of these guys, you know, barely came out of their shell. Like Draymond came out of it a bit at the end. Steph started looking more comfortable. But what happens to Cleveland if Golden State came out with the game that they had down the stretch there at the end of the season? Because clearly they were not clicking to the percentage that they could.
It's funny.
If you know what I'm saying.
It's funny because these two teams, they split their two games in the regular season. So there wasn't as much of a disparity as people think. But on the whole, Golden State, they weren't themselves all playoffs, which just tells you how scary they are. They struggled in every series.
And I got to give them credit for that.
And they came out winning handily at the end of it. And it's just, it's scary when you think we just talked about dynasties in the Blackhawks, dynasties in the San Antonio Spurs, heck, the New England Patriots. I mean, we've seen so many of these different teams. The Golden State Warriors have all the makings of that, and this was their first crack at it, which is the scariest part. They didn't take that thump like Kevin Durant and the Thunder did. They didn't take that thump like the 2007 Cavaliers,
right,
who lost to the Spurs. They won this on the first try, and you're right, Flip. It's very scary to think how good they could be if they were at their full strength.
I think when I look at it, too, I think leadership. I think, you know, it's a long season. It's a long playoff stretch. Who's the leader in that locker room for Golden State? And, you know, obviously on the floor it's Steph Curry, but, you know, is he the guy in the dressing room too? Is he a vocal leader? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if you guys know if he's, you know, clearly he's their dude on the floor. He's the captain. He's the general. But off the court, you know, and I guess why I'm bringing this up is if you're saying they're going to lose some guys next year, does it really affect them? Does it affect them enough to not get them back in a deep run? Because realistically, the talent is there for days. I think we've talked about it at end, the bench, you know, they've got all kinds of depth. But realistically, are they going to lose one of those key pieces off the court that maybe messes with the rhythm?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating because you bring up a great point, Flip. It depends on who they end up losing. Mm. I mean, we were talking off air, Ali and I, about David Lee. There's a possibility they could be working out a trade to see if they can get him on a team where he can probably start again. Draymond Green is somebody who, if they have a dynasty in mind, they cannot lose. He was arguably their third best player all season, and we saw his worth in this final game, putting up that triple-double. So we'll see. I mean, I'm blown away that you actually think that the Cavs will be the early favorite for the NBA Finals.
I appreciate that.
I think that it's probably, like, if I had to say somebody, I'd say it's either Golden State or probably San Antonio.
Always.
That's my pick. But even from the Cavs perspective, it's going to be interesting. I brought up the whole thing with Tristan Thompson. What happens with Kevin Love? I mean, obviously he'll have different locations in mind as to where he wants to go.
He talk about returning to Cleveland next year. So
exactly.
It could potentially be that he waits for the opt-out. He takes the opt-out, and then waits for a max deal when the new TV contract kicks in. So
exactly, which is huge for all the teams involved. So I can't wait to see what happens in the offseason and how these teams look after that.
Just kind of to speak on a contrast of these two teams, it's funny because Alex, known as Stephen LeBron on Twitter, he posted that amazing picture that the Cavs took one last team photo, and it's just LeBron sitting
gold.
There with the NBA Finals backdrop. And yet we're talking about a Warriors team that has so many pieces that you're wondering, who are they going to pay? And it's funny because me and Faisal joked about this while watching the game. Heck, Justin Holiday could probably play on half of these teams, and the dude is the 15th man on this bench. He's sitting there, right? And it just speaks to how deep they really are. And I think, Flip, you talk about leadership, and I really think a large part of that is Steve Kerr, having played on those teams with Jordan, having played on those San Antonio Spurs team. And it's interesting, the stat that comes up. The Warriors lost 20 games all season, 83-20, I believe, was their record.
And just to play off of that, we brought it up earlier, but the Golden State Warriors are the third team in NBA history to have 83 or more wins over a course of a season and a postseason. And Steve Kerr, like you just mentioned, was involved in those two Bulls teams that were also part of those three. So he's been a part of all three of these record-setting teams. So
yeah, and he had a chance to go to the Knicks. And what happened? The Knicks lost their 20th game on December 10th. So the guy definitely, there's an aura of leadership with Steve Kerr that comes from him that's very special. If you saw the moment last night with Draymond Green, it was a great clip where Draymond's talking to his mom and he's like, "Ma, they said I couldn't play in this league." And it's just, it speaks volumes to the kind of team they are. They're a team that played all season with the chip on their shoulder. Heck, Phil Jackson tweeted out early in the playoffs that three-point shooting teams relatively are not as successful in the playoffs as well. So they sort of had that chip on their shoulder all the time. When Dellavedova, not saying he could lock down Curry, but I'm sure Curry heard those reports. He heard that criticism.
Yeah, that's madness.
Right, and for them to do what they did is something so special. And again, it comes down to just appreciating the greatness of how good this team was over the regular season and playoffs.
And you know what, man? As the biggest LeBron fan in the booth, clearly, I'll give the Golden State Warriors all the credit they deserve. Great season. Best team during the regular season. Best team during the playoffs. And they deserved it. And you know what? Regardless of who they lose, unless it's a few guys, I realistically think that they'll be back there again. I don't know what your guys' closing thoughts on this is in terms of moving forward for Golden State.
You know what? I mean, we'll see what happens after the offseason, who they decide to pay and things like that. It's going to be fascinating to see what they end up deciding to do. Like I said, I do think
they repeat, Dwayne?
If they return Draymond Green, like I said, I really think that San Antonio, after the season they had, if they can somehow bring in
LaMarcus maybe?
Aldridge to that team, I don't know how anybody can stop them.
I guess so. We'll have to wait and see for the NBA free agency. Maybe.
Yeah. All I know is myself and Dwayne have won some Greek boy courtesy of Flip Livingstone and Stacey Deshaun.
To wrap this up, guys, I'll give you the credit. You took the Golden State Warriors. They won. They were the better team. You stuck with them. Hopefully you all stick with us out there. Keep listening. We always, always appreciate the support. And to just finish this one off, I want to throw a huge shout-out out there to one of our biggest supporters, Auntie Linda, just recovered from a massive surgery, loves the sports from the six. Huge shout-out to Auntie Linda. Shout-out to Jess Patton for supporting and holding down the booth. Thank you all for listening. On behalf of
Jess,
Ali Conrav, Johnny, and Dwayne Turner, this is Flip Livingstone signing out.